There were soldiers at the crossing. Bex thought about it, then dismissed the idea. Just go along with Tess. They can prove nothing. Let's just see how it develops. This way at least you might learn something. The pavement ahead was empty, but traffic had become almost nose to tail in the direction of Brissago. Far away, the sound of the steamer's horn blared twice across the water as it put into Ascona. The villa here, on the left. Tessa was hard behind her now, yet not quite close enough for Bex to do anything. The traffic unclogged itself and the road cleared. They moved out of sight of the people across the road.
Were your brothers waiting?
Yes, but you know him now, don't you?
Alchemist, yes, Bex wanted to say.
Don't know him from Adam, nor you. What did you say your name was?
I didn't. Just keep walking.
Her dream came back, and Bex felt a tape over her mouth, her eyebrows sticky from where her eyes had been covered. The dream had been incredibly tactile, and the memories were strong in her senses. The fear moved again. About 50 yards in old money from the Villa Mirta now. Look, Bex said, softening her voice. Isn't this a bit melodramatic? I really don't know why you picked on me.
You don't. You really don't know what this is about.
Oh, sweet Jerusalem, her dream was going to come true. She was going to die in that lovely villa by the quiet lakeside. Well, if that was the case, she really should go down fighting. But Bex had almost reached the low gateway, and she saw the front door of the villa was slightly ajar.
Keep going,
Tessa, closer than ever. Bex wheeled around, ready to fight if she had to. Tessa Murray stood, legs apart, with the automatic pistol, visible for the first time, held at arm's length, her hands steady, with her cold, dark eyes wide open, and looking unblinking across the sights. Nobody was on the pavement behind her. As a car came into view, she lowered her arms, keeping the pistol close to her body, near her waist, turning a little to shield the weapon from eyes in the car.
"Come on, move yourself! We want to hear what you know, and how you know it. We might even let you off with a slap on the wrist, if you cooperate."
The urge to live, the possibility that she would not be killed, grabbed at Bex. Though she knew there was no real alternative, Tessa moved closer, jabbing at her with the muzzle of the little gun.
"Get in, will you? Move!"
So Rebecca Louise Oleska crossed the threshold of the little house she'd entered in her dream. This time it already smelled of death. Tess Murray pushed her hard against the wall of the neat little hallway. Bex took in the layout, the big mirror in an old gilt frame, and a low table with a telephone to her left, then the archway leading deeper into the house. Tessa thumped Bex on the shoulder, pushed her face into the wall, harshly whispering,
"Spread your legs, hands flat on the wall now. Get your fucking feet back."
She had Bex well off balance very quickly, hands against the hard wall, and taking all her weight with arms extended. She kicked out viciously at Bex's ankles, spreading her legs wider. Then she shouted with an abrasive laugh,
"I'm home, honey. Home is the hunter, home from the hill."
Calling to her brother, Bex thought. And Tess moved to the left of Rebecca and kicked a door open. Instinctively, Bex knew the door led to the room at the front of the villa. She heard Tess involuntarily sniff the air and caught the whiff of blood and excreta that comes with sudden, violent death. Then Bex heard the screaming from Tessa, followed by the moaning,
"Oh no! Oh no!"
keening, rocking.
"Sweet Mother of Jesus, no!"
Bex flexed her arms, did a push-up against the wall, pushed herself off, and caught Tessa unaware, blindsiding her. A cupped right hand going hard for the left side of the girl's head, smashing into the air with some force. The cupped hand sending a nasty, painful shockwave calculated to damage the eardrum. Tess yelped, fell to one side, tried to recover, dropped the pistol, and smashed her shoulder against the door jamb. She was still wailing,
Dear God, who would do this? Oh, no, my God, no!
It came out along.
No!
And Beck swooped down, lifted the pistol from the carpet, and paused for a split second, as she saw the man whom she thought had been alchemist on his back, sprawled, unnatural, like an effigy to be burned on a Guy Fawkes night bonfire. He still wore the dark blazer, its front soaked in gore. The head lolled back, the face a mush of blood, where bullets had torn the features away, more blood spreading over the floor. She remembered some Shakespearean quote about not realizing someone had so much blood in him, not using it aloud. As she recalled, it came from Macbeth, and it was bad news to quote from the Scottish play. She swiveled, turning and bringing the little pistol to bear on Tessa, and saw that the woman was half against the wall, drooping and bent, limp with shock, her face parched white, lips trembling, arms hanging down. "Up," said Bex, low and very cool. Then the front door batted open and the slim, tall figure leaped into the entrance hall, his navy blazer undone, trench coat flapping around his legs, iron grey hair falling over his brown, leathery face in open concentration. She could not have explained how she knew that this was the man who had disappeared in front of her last night, but she knew. Bex turned, brought the pistol up, but the man simply slapped the weapon to the ground in an almost lazy movement, but with incredible strength behind it. Taking two long paces forward, he brought back his right hand, chopping down firmly on Tess Murray's neck. The Irish girl had no idea what happened. She simply slumped forward with a little moan. "Name's Wright, DCI Oleska. Patsy Wright. Come to get you out. Think we should really make a mad dash for the border." He glanced into the little sitting room and saw the body. "Oh, yuck. This is very nasty, ma'am. Please, I think I'd better give you a lift." "How do I know?" "You don't, but neither of us has the brief to be here. I thought I was simply lifting you out of a dangerous situation. Now someone's got himself separated from life. This could be..." For a second he seemed lost for words. "It could be, well, unpleasant." But Bex looked unconvinced. "Sorry, but I really have to stick around. Please don't make me get violent again. London told me you'd married old Charlie Gauntlet, true?" "How do I know that you didn't nip in here and shoot the life out of the fellow before I arrived with little Miss PMS? "Because I rarely shoot people. Come on, let's move. Charles would want it. You'll see." He had her by the wrist, pulling her through the door, and she suddenly became aware of what he'd said on his arrival. "Patsy Wright?" she asked. Her lovely Charles had talked of Patsy Wright. A legend he was.
"A man you don't want to be without in a ticklish situation, eh?"
Charlie had often told her.
"Saved my life a couple of times, Patsy. Hot as mustard and twice as accurate."
Whatever that meant.
"Take my word for it, Patsy Wright in the flesh. Come on, and I hope you've got your passport."
"Yes, I
think come on."
He yanked her out to the gate, then across the road to a little scarlet and silver Terrano Due that was parked neatly, pointing toward Italy. 10 minutes later they crossed the frontier, and the long, lithe Patsy Wright grinned at her.
"How'd you like joyriding in a fast Nipponese car with a young fellow me lad like me, eh, sport? Make old Charles jealous, what?"
For the first time in days, Bex laughed, though on looking down she saw that her hands were still shaking. "Isn't the Murray girl in danger?" Her voice was small, and she felt her stomach turn over.
"Well, by the look of things, someone didn't like her boyfriend, that's for sure. You didn't pick up anyone else on your tail?"
She told him she'd seen nobody, and again realized as she said it that she had, in fact, seen Patsy himself a couple of times. "You were watching me in Dublin, weren't you?"
"Guilty. I was with you at the opera as well."
"You were at the Dutchman? I wondered."
"Yep. They told me to move in closer that night."
"You saw Kit Palfrey, then?"
"Oh, indeed. There are those in London who are very interested in Mr. Palfrey."
"Even though the old evil empire is dismantled?"
"Especially now that the evil empire is dismantled."
Patsy gave her what her mother would have called an old-fashioned look.
"Very short of cash, Kit Palfrey. In need of a loot injection."
Another half hour, and they were at the western end of the lake, in Stresa,
which Patsy said reminded him of a huge British tea room, quickly adding that this was not original. Read it somewhere in a guidebook and thought it was apt, the Brit tea room line, I mean. He said Stresa was a great stopping-off place for package tours visiting Lake Maggiore, cheaper than the Swiss end, and a good centre for day trips. He was relaxed and chatty, as though lifting lady coppers from danger and looking at the recently dead was nothing out of the ordinary. There's a blandness about the place that reminds me of old, established British southern seaside towns, Wright drawled, and the comparison made Beck smile, but did not quell the butterflies in her stomach, nor the afterburn of that morning's frightening experience. She dragged the conversation back to the matter in hand. I meant, was it wise to leave Tess Murray on her own? I don't suppose she is. You were on her back, and my brief was to watch you. But I don't for a minute think we were out on our own out there. Thought I caught a flash of Mickey Herring and Fatty Brimstone along the way in Dublin. Mad Mickey Herring and Fatty Brimstone were a pair of hard men, known to the anti-terrorist branch as having tenuous links with intelligence in many of its forms. Mercenaries of the secret world. Patsy drove down toward the lake and parked the car on the Via Duchessa di Genova, close to the small hotel in which he'd booked a room on the previous evening. Squinting at the girl, he saw a still lingering suspicion in her eye. I really am here on duty. I've been following you around for days. You're like a bloody yo-yo, DCI Aleska. Talking of yo-yos, you wouldn't have to know where my dear husband is now. With a mess of Anglican monks on a godforsaken little gobbit of rock off the west of Scotland. And I get the impression that he shouldn't be there. He's no longer under any discipline, and all kinds of odd things are going on. Oh, if you're talking about a place called Ringmarookie, he wasn't there last night. He was in Glasgow, at the Central Hotel. But he left sometime this morning. She went on to tell him of her abortive telephone calls during the night. Patsy shook his head, as though this information was a great wonderment, but made no comment, except to tell her not to touch anything, as he would have told a small child, before he disappeared into the nearby small hotel. He was back again, clutching a small overnight airline bag, and moving at a swift trot. Your husband's on the move again, and your presence is requested back in London. That's where we're heading. He started the car and handed her a piece of fax paper. To T.P. Cowley, it said. Cowley? She asked. Flag of convenience. Might as well call me Chicken Madras. He started the car and sought out the best way to get to Milan, as Bex read. To T.P. Cowley, from Managing Director. Your friend's husband has been wandering around but is now headed back to the Holy Island. This is a little too close to people who are of interest. We suggest that his wife should follow, and you should accompany her. Call me soonest on arrival London. Your friend should talk to her M.D. It was signed with the initials M.J.B. I take it they're looking out for the Murray woman, and they're talking about us going to Scotland.
Well, it's not the three little pigs, darling. Yes, you'll have a great time with the monks, I've no doubt. As for Teresa Murray, I think she may be quite important. So I guess someone will be sniffing around after her.
Neither of them would have believed the truth at this point, that the man they called Alchemist lived, and was, like them, on his way to Milan, having ploughed across the lake in his sleek little motorboat, with Tessa sitting glum beside him. Patsy showed no great haste in driving the AS Autostrada to Milan, and from there to the Malpensa airport. Seats were available on a late afternoon BA flight into Heathrow, so in the early evening, Bex, accompanied by Patsy Wright, arrived back in London and headed straight for Scotland Yard. By the time Bex got in to see Commander Joe Bain at OS-13, he knew that Alchemist still lived, moved, and was about his business.